Hello and welcome to this latest in the CKI series of podcasts. Today we are talking about preferential origin, a very sensitive topic in the EU and the UK, especially since Brexit. The complexity and extent of trade between the EU and the UK before Brexit was really extraordinarily large. So after Brexit, the rules affecting imports and exports impacted differently across the wide range of products and arrangements that existed in the trading relationship. One of the most contentious has turned out to be preferential origin. To discuss this today, I'm joined by Peter Hayssert from Brussels and Claudia Romanita Stroh from the UK, both of whom have kindly volunteered to offer their views on the issues around the preferential origin. Now, to begin the discussion, just a little bit of background. Free trade agreements have generally been taken, and economists will tell you that free trade agreements are the soul of trade. And a free trade agreement is generally understood to mean that two countries exchange goods without customs duties. However, when you look at the implementation of free trade agreements, there is a growing realization that the actual freedom, the practical freedom, depends very much on the nature of the traders. In other words, is it manufacturer to manufacturer? Is it manufacturer to retail? Is it distributor to retail? Is it, that relationship is quite significant. And also, it depends on the attitude of customs. Will customs check the goods at the point of import? Will they conduct post-clearance checks up to 3 years later? And just generally, what is the political environment? Now, at the moment, we are clearly facing into a world of increasing customs tariffs. The days of negligible customs tariffs appear to be coming to an end, thanks to the United States' attitude to trade. Thanks to the EU emerging attitude towards regulation and indeed sanctions, and what is developing into something akin to a trade war with China. So, in the past, some companies could say, we won't bother with claiming preferential origin. The tariff is 2%, 3%, it's easier to pay it. Going forward, that does not look like a practical option. So today we want to look at just what are the problems with preferential origin? How do we find in Europe and the UK that customs implement the rules on preferential origin? And finally, how can companies prepare for the contingent liability, as it were, associated with customs audits and post-clearance checks on past importations. So, to start off with, perhaps, Peter, we might start with you. My first question would be, how practical for a business do you think the rules on preferential origin are? Particularly in relation to the trade and cooperation agreement with the UK.
Yeah, thank you. Good day, all everybody here. The rules of preferential origin are enshrined in these trade agreements, free trade agreements. There is a wide variety, and particularly with the between the EU and UK, there has been built in some, let's say, additional elements for flexibility. But in general, the practicality is a bit far to look for. And these free trade agreements only offer kind of framework and a concept, but don't explain in detail how you have to apply it. They have, of course, detailed list rules. What are the requirements that a certain product can be conferred preferential origin? That is in quite detailed explained in these all these agreements. But the whole mechanism and the supply chain, as an importer or a manufacturer, how to comply with these rules is a bit very high level and vague. So depending on the situation where you are in the supply chain, you have to interpret these agreements and see what is your taken, whether are your responsibilities as an importer, for instance, or as a manufacturer selling goods that require where clients require that you also would demonstrate that they have preferential origin. So it's quite different depending on the situation. And there is a number of issues that we, let's say, regularly see. If you are on the importing side, so you buy goods from overseas suppliers from the EU, for instance, if you're in the UK or vice versa, there is the customs authorities tend to be quite overzealous and formalities about documents. But as an importer, yeah, you have to rely on the information that is given by your supplier. And the rules to be applied by customs is quite strict. If your documents are not correct or not available, they are not so willing to actually think through that and see that you can actually deliver proof of origin. And again, you're also then as an importer completely dependent on the supplier and the quality of the information supplier.
Yes, absolutely.
That's like one thing. And then we have another, a completely other case is as a manufacturer or a seller of goods, your customers overseas, or even if you are manufactured in the EU and you have clients inside the EU, your clients may ask, can you give me long-term supply declarations, for instance, in the EU? Mm-hmm. Or your client in the UK may ask also invoice statements and this kind of information, of course, proof of origin. So we need to be capable to demonstrate it. And here the rules start to become a bit, let's say, theoretically clear, but to how to put it in practice,
yes,
difficult.
How to prove that the composition of your product exactly meets the conditions, yes. And then, of course, if you only export a small proportion of your production, the question is, can you justify spending the administrative time and money to produce those proofs? It's a complex question. I wonder, Claudia, could I ask, is the perception in the UK similar, that this is a really difficult challenge?
Good morning, and thank you for the introduction. From what I see in the UK, on both imports from the EU and exports to the EU, there are businesses that opt not to claim the preferential origin. And while knowing if your product qualifies for a preferential tariff rate can be a competitive advantage for your business, however, the complexity and the administrative burden and all the costs associated with compliance will have a negative impact on the process, because the rules of origin can be quite complex and requires detailed knowledge of the product's manufacturing process and the whole supply chain. I previously worked in the manufacturing industry in the logistics department, and I can say that everything is on an Excel spreadsheet, and it's not really easy to track every single input you have coming from different parts of the world, different suppliers. You eventually opt out of claiming the preferential origin because, and especially smaller businesses, they find it difficult to allocate the necessary resources to comply with these requirements. And if the savings from reduced tariffs will not outweigh the costs and the risk associated with the proving of origin, then businesses might decide strategically to simplify their operations and not pursuing the preferential treatment, unfortunately.
Yeah. But then the that, as I say, has been an issue for some time that businesses would not see it worthwhile to claim it. But as tariffs are rising, and they really are rising now, that issue becomes difficult. Could I give an example from Ireland, actually, of just the impracticality of some of the rules? The supplier statement, which, as Peter has mentioned, and indeed, Claudia, you mentioned as well, that the producer of the goods must be able to produce essentially a table showing all of the non-originating inputs and showing if it's a value-based test or proof of origin, showing that the total value of the non-originating inputs doesn't exceed an amount, say 40%, of the ex works value of the goods as they're sold. Fine. But then, if the manufacturer sells the product to a distributor, charges the ex works price, that's fine. The distributor then decides to export the goods. What is the relevance of the ex works price in that situation? Because it has now moved to a second stage of sale where it's being sold by somebody who obviously is adding on a profit. Their price will be higher than the original ex works price, but the proof is still the same. And if the distributor makes a statement on origin certifying that this product is originating, they must be prepared to produce the information, the detailed information from the manufacturer. And of course, the manufacturer will not release that information to a customer because it's confidential. It's highly commercial confidential information. So in fact, the net effect of this is that, as it were, goods being exported at the second stage or by somebody other than the manufacturer, it seems to me, cannot guarantee meeting the proofs of preferential origin.
You know, this pattern you see that very regularly. It's like a chain of transactions. It's in the supply chain, literally, actually. And these the frameworks of preferential rules of origin are not exactly up to that. It's like based on the idea of we transmit between these parties documents. It's then also really a document-based chain of information and not the data itself inside. And so that conceptually, this is based on 30 years, 40 years past practices where yes. You have like a single transaction between two parties, import and exporting. But the more complex the supply chains are, the more impractical this type of subsequent transmitting proofs of origin and then recalculating things start to become.
Actually,
what Claudia says, it becomes a huge spreadsheet management in many companies, and they, that's you can also start thinking then where does it stop and end? There's a lot of things that are not clarified in these agreements.
Yeah.
How do we have aggregate certain things to take into account, even account accounting segregation, the ex works price? What does it contain really? It's not taking account very complex supply chains, and that's where you see companies struggling, trying to take that in hand with spreadsheets, and then eventually, of course, there are a few solutions out there in the market that could help, of course, to automate this as good as possible. But it's quite a sophisticated process to get it.
You'd be using something like blockchain or something like that. Huh? Yeah. In the UK, Claudia, the UK before Brexit was a major center of distribution of goods, particularly third country goods throughout the EU. Has that declined or has it been affected by the...
I believe so, because I think businesses are now using customs warehouses in the EU.
Right. So they're trying to reduce the number of steps in the chain. Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. No.
What I can, I think, Claudia, we see also companies in the UK actually also looking into the concept of customs warehouses for the various reasons, because There's like the land bridge via UK to transmit goods further to Ireland. Then it becomes also already relevant, and also to postpone any duties if there's any due, but also if there's like a reshipment back to the EU, or if there is again a need for proving origin to another client.
Yeah.
Yeah, your goods must be under customs control and a bonded warehouse. The customs warehouse is then adding another requirement in that supply chain, yes.
So what we're looking at really is a system, as you say, Peter, that was developed maybe for 30, 40 years ago, or even perhaps older than that. And now it's being applied on a very complex and multi-step production model. Do either of you have a view on how customs are viewing this? Because much of this, as you know, in the Trade and Cooperation Agreement and in free trade agreements and customs law generally, there's a good deal of flexibility and discretion allowed to the customs authorities. That if the customs authorities are satisfied, then they may pass the goods. Do you feel that the customs authorities, perhaps we might take a comment from you first, Claudia, because HMRC is now implementing the border target operating model. Do you feel that the attitude of customs there is understanding of the difficulty business has with the complexity of the system?
I believe they do understand and they are aware of the difficulties traders are facing. And but at the same time, they are not really flexible. Like from a customs clearance perspective, if you have an origin statement on the invoice and the REX number is not included in the statement, but it is on the invoice, they will not accept that as a valid statement.
Yeah.
So that's causing quite a few issues because the importers and the exporters are always back and forth and asking for amendments. That's causing delays at the borders. And you have the demurrage charges waiting on. But at the same time, there are things you can benefit from, like I think the retrospective claims. I think it can be useful for traders. From my point of view, is also encouraging compliance. Because if a statement is not made on time, or if the trader doesn't know at the time of importation if the product qualifies for preferential treatment, or maybe the exporter didn't have a REX number at the time of export but was in the process of getting one, you can have the possibility to claim the preference retrospectively up to 3 years after importation.
Yes.
And I think encourages businesses to only claim the preferential if they can prove it.
So they would take the cash flow hit, as it were, of paying the duty at the time of importation and then make a retrospective claim. But I have experience of doing that in a case, and customs acknowledged the validity of the claim, but then proceeded to check it by referring it to the exporting country customs authority for verification, which is likely to take about a year. So that's customs, and I worked for many, many years in the Revenue and Customs Authority in Ireland, and I can tell you that revenue authorities are very reluctant to give money back. They don't like making refunds. So it's unlikely to be a smooth process. Yes, no, Peter.
Yes, for giving money back, indeed, reclaims, they are, of course, at certain levels, they are also controlled by the EU authorities and that that are checking into that as well. But I think I concur also with what Claudia says. What you see is customs, whether it's now in the EU, but also with our partner countries, the partner trade agreement countries, and not only UK, but some of the other PEM countries, for instance, you see that they are completely, they actually don't really use this concept of preferential origin management to go, in fact, their controlling task should, I think, a bit more holistic and go and try to understand the supply chain that's behind there and see whether there is a decent framework of proof of origin management by the companies issuing actually demonstrating a preferential origin. No, they actually completely over-focus to documents. And this example of Claudia, so there's something missing and that document is not anymore valid. What are we talking actually about? And this is an over-focus on documents.
Yes.
And a lack of understanding of these preferential origin management concepts. That's also what you see. Many customs officers are not so well educated in this topic, and they are very good in maybe tariff classification, and sometimes they over-focus to details in the declaration process. But preferential origin is very poorly managed. That's my opinion by customers, and it actually doesn't help it because it even confuses businesses. Some businesses we are talking to and try to guide through these concept of origin management and how can you automate it instead of with spreadsheets. They sometimes are confronted with for years no control or not any ask by customs authorities.
That's right, yes.
So, are you really encouraged to do it? Yes, because of the risk. And so you want to be a compliant company and have no issues that in future. But it's very strange that there's like no decent question. And if, then it's sometimes extremely superficial. But of course, in the past, Anthony, we have seen in the past these huge cases of preferential origin mismanagement. And that's sometimes invoked by the EU authorities. That see fraud cases, it is huge fraud cases, then invoke again a bit of attention. But these are, let's say, at the end of the day, these are really edge cases. And as a company to work in a safety mode, I mean predictable for management of your business, there should be a little bit more guidance. How can we set up proof of origin in a decent, predictable, feasible, manageable manner, besides everything what's in the preferential agreements, that is like a common guidance for that. In the past, the EU Commission, for instance, issued such guidelines, but still, I think it can be much more practical to the current situation today, and especially with our very deep trade lanes with the UK. And for the UK itself, I think Claudia and also Anthony have seen this. So it's even more complex because if you're a manufacturer in the UK, you may need to comply with those EU trade agreement rules. Mm-hmm. But then you're also sourcing from the rest of the world and you have to comply with the other ones as well. It's certainly not helping manufacturers in the UK to simplify it right now. But
we are talking about preferential origin, but of course the problems that you outlined, Peter, apply also to compliance with the various regulations, like the proposed eco design regulation and the product safety regulation, and so on. That where again the importer is required to take responsibility and show proof for the entire supply chain. It's enormously difficult. I suppose one of the things that certainly small and medium enterprise finds it hard to get their heads around is the fact that your goods may be stopped at the border. And at the border, the customs officers, for whatever reason, may find themselves satisfied with the documents produced. As you say, Claudia, maybe the statement isn't on the invoice, it's on another piece of paper, and they say that's okay, and the goods go through. And then perhaps a year, 2 years later, when the goods have been sold, right, and have moved on, the importer no longer has the goods and can no longer adjust their price of sale, customs will then come along, and a different team, in this case, the audit team, who are indoors, they do not stand at the border, they study the law, and they will come and request your documents and examine their your documents and say that is missing a date, and because it's missing a date, it's invalid. Therefore, you must pay us all the duty on what you imported 2 years ago. And small and medium companies, in certainly in Ireland, in my experience, they can't understand this. But customs looked at these, they passed them, you know. And they can't understand this concept of post-clearance checks. And one of the big challenges, I think, Peter, to pick up on your point, that companies need to prepare and they need guidance and they need, obviously, professional assistance. But to a small company operating on relatively small profit margins, you know, I mean, some of the big fraud cases that you refer to relate to enormously expensive products, you know, nuclear reactors and big generators and aircraft engines and things like that. Very high value, high profit. But most trade, of course, is relatively low value goods with a small profit margin in them. And for a company trading in those goods, trying to justify the cost of setting up a system is quite difficult. I suppose, you know, what advice could we give these smaller companies, which traditionally they trade on the basis of reviewing the world market and finding their products at the cheapest price wherever they can? Can they continue to operate like that? Is there a way into the future for such companies to thrive?
No, if you ask it to me, indeed, I can concur with the. I have also seen dramas to be in these small and medium-sized companies that have been confronted with post-clearance recovery of payment of duties or the request to pay the preferential duty rates. Certainly for textile products, of course, this is not so much between EU and UK, but then in the general system of preferences framework, you see that. So these companies rely on sellers or manufacturers in these countries that actually should prove preferential origin, or they ask for that. So what we suggested that companies is at least the sources or the purchase department or the people that actually going the buyers of these goods, that they have a minimum knowledge about this risk, I would say. Mm-hmm. And the contractual terms of these companies, try to insert a few of assumptions that you made, that if we agree on this, on the term that you will deliver us a preferential, approval of preferential origin, at least these are the rules, the list rules that I mean, and that's maybe the most simple. Do you adhere to it? And especially for goods that are actually, as you already said, Anthony, that are also at the same time, also subject to anti-dumping duties, that may be quite important that this type of topic is also taken into account. That's maybe less a topic of preferential origin, but less more about non-preferential origin. But the two topics are, in a certain way, as for an importer, the same type of risk. I would say you have to rely on somebody else's proof of origin. And if it's wrong, then you are liable. And the current state of the Union Customs Code, yeah, there's still, at least at the EU side, there's still the concept of good faith. And you could try to play with it. But in the new future EU customs reform, and that's gone. That concept is not there anymore.
No, it's not.
And that's, that means, indeed, as you say, that's the importers just have additional requirements on their shoulders. And there is not only about this preferential and non-preferential origin, but other examples that you give.
I think,
consider, yes.
If I may make a somewhat cynical remark, it occurs to me, reading the proposed new Union Customs Code, that the EU is perfectly confident that our trading partners will not respond in like manner. So The EU is confident to impose more and more controls, knowing that, of course, our trading partners will never respond. Yeah. Claudia, moving on to the UK, in terms of SMEs, I know there's been a lot of confusion in the UK, and we see it with many UK companies, in fact, ceasing to trade with Ireland, for example. Is that confusion resolving itself, do you think? Are things settling down?
Not really, I would say.
Okay.
There's still confusion around how to claim the preferential duty rate.
Okay.
Where do I need the REX number? Do I need a normal origin statement? Businesses are a little bit anxious around the preferential origin topic, and they
It's interesting, isn't
prefer
it?
to
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, Claudia, that, as you say, you have a background in the logistics industry. And as you know, the documentation, the non-customs documentation for moving goods around is very extensive. But
Yeah.
it's very well known, and logistics managers do this automatically. Is there any prospect that we might come to that kind of acceptance of practice in relation to the customs, or is customs just too variable?
I think it's really important to be proactive
Mm.
and identify any issues before they become problematic. And I think traders should ensure they have all their documents, like the bills of materials, invoices, production records, or supplier declarations. They need to keep a record of all these documents and to ensure they are also easily accessible.
Yes. Yeah, it's challenging though, isn't it? It is complex. I suppose, could I attempt to draw a conclusion from our chat? I think that we are now in a world where if a company is reliant on imports or intends to export, I think the advice that certainly I would give is that they should establish their management systems and recording systems before they begin. I know if they've been importing for years, it's impossible to do that, but they need to, if that's the case, they need to reset, because with customs reform coming, with more regulation, with sanctions, with all of the new controls being imposed and coming into force over the next couple of years, it's going to get more difficult. So companies should really, at this point, reset and review their systems for managing the imports and exports. Is that a fair conclusion, Claudia?
Yes, I totally agree.
No, and I would concur. Yes, indeed, Anthony, I would concur. And maybe adding to that, that if it's really important for a company, and in terms of volume or value, there are also ways to automate the process as far as possible, and step away a bit from the very clunky Excel management situation as Claudia described. It's possible to automate it. There are a few solutions out there in the market that could be really helpful to look after and actually increase compliance and giving a lot more visibility on the quality of data for preferential origin management.
Great. Listen, I've enjoyed that chat, and thank you both very much, Claudia Stroh and Peter Hayesart, and we hope to have further conversations in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.